Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Why don't you sit down? I can't sit down. Sit down, I told you. I can't sit down. Go away, don't bother me. I can't sit down because I just got to heaven and I can't sit down.
She was a church lady who could play wicked guitar, Sister Rosetta Tharpe. This is Soundcheck. I'm Beth Fertig, filling in for John Schaefer. She was gospel's first superstar who inspired Elvis Presley, Little Richard, and Jerry Lee Lewis. But today, Sister Rosetta Tharpe is largely unknown and lies in an unmarked grave in Philadelphia. Gail Wald is a professor of English at George Washington University and author of Shout, Sister, Shout, the untold story of rock and roll trailblazer Sister Rosetta Tharpe. She joins us from the NPR studios in Washington. Gail, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Great to be here.
In the 1970s, you wrote that some critics had called Sister Rosetta Tharpe a black Elvis, but Elvis, in fact, she preceded Elvis, and he was inspired by her. So why didn't critics see this?
That's right. There was one instance of a critic in England seeing a performance of Rosetta Tharpe in the early 70s and saying that she appeared to him to be a blacked-up Elvis in drag. And, of course, it was just the opposite. It was a very strange coinage. I think it's for a variety of reasons. Rosetta Tharpe was a performer who really defied categorization. As you said, she was a gospel singer and guitarist, but she flaunted the rules in the gospel church, flouted the rules in the gospel church by playing music with a lot of rhythm. She had a kind of commanding stage presence. She was kind of on the border between gospel and something else. And in her day, that was fairly controversial, although she went on to be influential to many, many musicians.
But she wasn't acknowledged as a predecessor of Elvis.
You know, Elvis himself would have given props to Rosetta Tharpe. Gordon Stone, and of course I didn't speak to Elvis myself personally about this.
But some people would say they could.
I didn't find a way to do that. But Gordon Stoker, who is a member of the Jordanaires, which is Elvis's backup group, they do the oohs and ahs on Hound Dog and songs like that. He told me lots of stories about Elvis backstage, talking about how much he appreciated Rosetta Tharpe's music. Elvis, of course, grew up on some of the same gospel music that Rosetta Tharpe mm-hmm. would have. Elvis was from he grew up in the Assemblies of God, a Pentecostal church, a white Pentecostal church, and Rosetta Tharpe was from an African-American Pentecostal church. So in some ways, I think Elvis would have given credit where credit was due. But by the 1970s, some critics at least were already used to or had already become accustomed to a notion of a guitar-wielding kind of dangerous masculinity that usually came in the package of a white guy, and that was the image of a rock hero. And they had forgotten about people like Rosetta Tharpe,
who did not look like the rock and roll hero.
No, and you know, the when I first really got interested in doing this project, I saw a video of her, and it's actually a video that people can see on YouTube these days. And it turns out that it was from a mid-1960s performance on a TV show called TV Gospel Time, which was short-lived, I think, probably because it aired on Sunday mornings when most of the people who might have been watching it were at church. In any case, she performed on this show, and she played a white Gibson electric guitar backed by a full gospel choir, and I should say a male gospel choir. And she was wearing a kind of church lady modest dress and really kind of ripping it up on this guitar. And when I first saw this image of her, first of all, I wasn't used to seeing a woman in this kind of commanding frontman, we have that word frontman, position, being backed by an all-male group. That was one thing. And here was a woman, she was clearly middle-aged. She came from the church, clearly, but she was playing the guitar and singing with a kind of abandon and with a kind of charisma and power that I really associated with rock and roll. And that was when it hit me, you know, what does seeing, you know, it kind of brought to, I guess it brought to bear for me all of the assumptions that I had about what rock and roll sound and style look like and who embodies that sound and style. And that was the beginning of this project for me.
Well, we have a clip of that from the 1962 gospel TV program. Sister Rosetta Tharpe is singing and playing solo electric guitar on the song Up Above My Head. So let's take a listen.
You know, I really do believe, joy somewhere. All in my home. Music everywhere.
there. Up above my head, and it feels like in the air. You know, I really do believe joy is so fine. Oh, yes, oh, yes.
Rosetta Tharpe singing Up Above My Head. We actually have a clip of this on our Soundcheck show page if you go to WNYC.org along with the song Down by the Riverside. And I'm Beth Fertig filling in for John Schaefer on Soundcheck, and our guest is Gail Wald, author of Shout, Sister, Shout, the untold story of rock and roll trailblazer Sister Rosetta Tharpe. Gail, I do have to ask you, because you are an English professor at George Washington University, what got you interested in Sister Rosetta Tharpe? You said it was this video, but I heard that you saw this at an academic conference.
On an academic conference on rock and roll. Actually, my training is in African-American literature, and that's primarily what I teach at George Washington University. But I've had a long-standing kind of side interest, which is now not a side interest, in music. And it's actually not that disconnected from the kind of cultural analysis that I have been trained in as a literature professor, and it comes in quite handy when I teach students things like James Baldwin's novels, which are filled with gospel song in them. So it's kind of connected, and English departments, people are doing all kinds of fun stuff these days.
So as the resident rock critic in the English department, what is it about Sister Rosetta Tharpe's guitar playing that really grabbed you? Because you mentioned, you know, here she is, a woman on stage, a black woman, she's dressed like a woman, you know, she's mm-hmm. she's playing this electric guitar and she's really rocking it. Mm-hmm. And you've even said, you know, she did kind of like the Pete Townsend windmill style mm-hmm. at times. What is it that, you know, we can hear on the air here and that you saw that made her so unique?
One thing that you might not be able to hear exactly, although if you have a good imagination, I think you might be able to hear it even from that little sound clip, is the way that she kind of had command over the instrument. That's something that I heard a lot of times when I was asking people about what was it about, people who knew Rosetta Tharpe, what was it about her guitar playing that made her distinct? And often they reached for metaphors that were actually masculine metaphors. She mastered the guitar. She tamed the guitar. She kind of ruled over that guitar. So she had a command of the instrument that she literally embodied. As you said, she kind of rocked with her instrument. She kind of seemed comfortable with it. It was kind of an extension of her body. Musically, she was able to make the switch from the acoustic guitar to the electric guitar with a real kind of panache. You played her playing acoustic guitar at the outset of the show, and when she played acoustic guitar, she had a kind of busy style. She had a finger-picking style that allowed her to kind of make interesting sound with an instrument that didn't have any sustain. So an acoustic guitar, when you plucked a string, the sound would go away as soon as it was produced. Whereas with an electric guitar, you could have that sound linger in the air. And when Rosetta Tharpe switched to electric guitar primarily as a performer, this would have been in the 1940s, she found ways of using that sustain, and kind of she enjoyed a loud, kind of noisy, dirty sound. And you even heard that in that performance clip
Definitely.
That you just played. You know, it's a gospel performance. She's doing a praise song to God, and yet it has this noisy, dirty sound to it.
But
and
she didn't start off as a guitar player, did she? She was a child prodigy in the Pentecostal church. So how did that influence her in her performance style?
Yeah, her mother was actually a mandolin player, and she probably the first instrument that Rosetta Tharpe played was the piano, which she tapped out on her mother's lap when she was just a child. But she was also given a little guitar when she was just a girl, probably 4 or 5 years old. And by the time she was 6, she was performing publicly, and this would have been in church, with her guitar. And people at her church in Chicago, which is where she eventually moved with her mother, called her the pint-sized guitar-playing miracle. And she had, apparently, even at that young age, a real way of speaking to an audience, of getting the attention of, in this case, it would have been a congregation, but really kind of moving the spirit. And she was able to do that with her guitar as well as with her voice very early on.
You said she left the gospel church in a way by, or at least sharing her passion for gospel with the secular world. She left a tent revival meetings that she was going to for New York in the late 1930s, and yet she kept her foot in both worlds. playing gospel on Sunday mornings, but kind of rocking out on Saturday nights as she became more and more into the guitar. So how did she make that connection, I guess, between the sacred and the secular?
Well, she shocked some of the people in her very conservative, I should say socially conservative, but musically very liberal church, which was the Church of God in Christ, by taking her talents and putting them on a secular stage, initially at the Cotton Club in New York City, which in 1938, it wasn't really the height of the Cotton Club, but still this was a prestigious gig in New York City, a prestigious secular gig. She didn't have a problem, like some other gospel singers then and now, actually, with sharing her gift. And
they would have turned that down.
Her alibi sometimes, and you hear it a lot, was that, you know, if there were sinners in the nightclub, maybe if she played music from the stage of the Cotton Club, she could reach those sinners. I'm not sure if that wasn't anything more than an alibi. I think she was a performer who loved an audience and was happy to have her music appreciated where it could be appreciated. And she also made much better living as a secular performer than she did in the gospel world. But she was unique almost in really trying to keep a foot in both worlds. Most performers who made that switch, say a Dinah Washington before she became Dinah Washington, grew up in the church, singing in the church. But once most performers made that switch, they didn't go back. Or if they did go back, they kind of zigzagged back and forth like a Little Richard. Rosetta Tharpe was distinct in really trying to bridge worlds, and that endeared her to an enormous number of audiences, white Southerners, black Southerners, people in the church, people outside of the church, people who weren't necessarily jazz or gospel aficionados, people who were very familiar with gospel music. So she had a very wide audience, but it did disturb some people in her church who felt that she shouldn't have been using her gift in that manner and in her church. And Rosetta Tharpe herself understood her musical talent as a gift that you were supposed to use well.
My guest is Gail Wald, author of Shout, Sisters, Shout, The Untold Story of Rock and Roll Trailblazer Sister Rosetta Tharpe. I'm Beth Fertig, filling in for John Schaefer on Soundcheck. Let's take a listen, because you mentioned that she became more popular in the secular world. This is Strange Things Happening Every Day, which was one of the top 10 race records, so to speak, by 1945. Here we listen to Sister Rosetta Tharpe.
All we hear church people say, they are in this holy way. There are strange things happening every day. On that last great judgment day, when they drive them all away, there are strange things happening every day. Every day.
Every day.
Every day.
Every day.
There are strange things happening every day.
Every day.
Every day.
Every day.
Every day. There are strange things happening every day.
If you want strange to things happening every day by Sister Rosetta Tharpe. And my guest is Gail Wald, who is an author of The Untold Story of Sister Rosetta Tharpe, much overlooked in the influence she had in rock and roll and R&B. Gail, that was a race record, so to speak, when blacks had crossover appeal in 1945, and she had a big hit with that one. But apparently she didn't continue that level of fame, even though a lot of rock and R&B performers did start off in the church, like Jerry Lee Lewis and Aretha Franklin and Sam Cooke. So what happened to her? Why, you know, that was in the top 10 race records. It had crossover appeal. It was the first gospel song to hit the Billboard race records top 10. What happened to her? Why didn't she continue that?
Yeah, she had quite a run in the 1940s. They were really her decade. And in the late 40s, she followed up that spectacular work on songs like Strange Things Happening Every Day with some wonderful duets with her singing partner, Marie Knight. And her success in that respect continued through the 1950s. By the mid-1950s, the record labels, including Decca, which was her label and was a major label, of course, were looking for ways to attract what was understood to be the new youth market, and the independent labels were doing that better than the majors. And Decca tried to get some of its group of musicians, including Rosetta Tharpe, to try her hand at rhythm and blues. And so she put out a couple R&B records in the mid and late 50s, and they didn't quite go over well. And I think, you know, one
was
of the
reasons... Was she too old, or was she a woman, and that wasn't hip at the time?
I think all of those things. I think the record labels were really trying to target young people, and she was in her 40s at that point. She was a kind of a black woman playing guitar. I don't think anyone knew how to market her. She, you know, then or now, people wouldn't have known exactly how to market her, which, of course, didn't mean that she wasn't marketable, but they hadn't figured out the formula yet because she kind of defied all of the categories. And so, actually, by the late 1950s, she had lost much of her U.S. audience. Even as a gospel performer, kind of the sounds had moved on, and she was considered a little bit old-fashioned by the 1950s when people might have been listening to, say, the Clara Ward Singers and not Rosetta Tharpe. On the other hand, even as she was becoming less commercially popular in the United States, she was gaining visibility abroad, especially in Europe and especially in England and France, where she was considered one of the greats, not just one of the gospel greats, but really one of the great guitar players and the great singers. And so in the late 50s and the 1960s, she had quite a thriving career in Europe. And that career didn't quite continue in the U.S., but arguably when she died in 1973, she was more well-known abroad than she was in the U.S.
What role did her wedding play in this? It was apparently a pretty controversial affair when she got married for the third time in 1951. And by the way, married for the third time, that in itself was a big deal back then. She had a public wedding where she performed a concert in her wedding dress, you said?
That's right. She got married, and it was kind of a publicity stunt. The person who was arranging the concert in Washington, D.C. In 1951 said, you know, what can we do to get a lot of people out here? And Washington had a baseball stadium. It's no longer in D.C., but it was Griffith Stadium. It's where the Washington Senators and the old Negro League Homestead Grays used to play. And they said, well, you know, people like a wedding and people like a concert. Let's combine them.
Did she sell tickets?
She absolutely sold tickets. They were not cheap. She was selling tickets for what it would have cost to go to a Senators baseball game. And she was actually outselling the Senators in Griffith Stadium. So she sold tickets. And, you know, if you wanted a ticket ticket that you could see well, you paid more for the ticket than the one in the nosebleed section. And she had the various members of her kind of musical entourage playing the roles in the wedding party. And she found the groom for the wedding. And they stayed married until her death in 1973. And they were married in front of about 20,000 people who had braved a hot night in Washington, D.C. when there was a trolley strike to come out and see her. And they were treated to a concert after the wedding.
Well, we're going to hear a little bit more of Sister Rosetta Tharpe. Here she is with the tune, God Don't Like It.
And let you have a little wine. But yet most everybody done got drunk, or they must be drinking moonshine. But God don't like it. I know, I'm so glad he don't like it. I know, and ain't you glad he don't like it? I know it's a scandalous and a shame. Some people get drunk every once in a while just to speak their sober mind. But as soon as they get caught in a trap, they put all the blame on moonshine. But God don't like it. I know, I'm so glad he don't like it. Ooh, I know he don't like it. I know it's a scandalous and a shame.
Sister Rosetta Tharpe with God Don't Like It. I don't know if she performed that at her wedding, but if she did, she was probably very happy when she was singing it. My guest is Gail Wald, author of the book Shout, Sister, Shout, The Untold Story of Rock and Roll Trailblazer Sister Rosetta Tharpe, and I'm Beth Fertig filling in for John Schaefer on Soundcheck. We got to wrap this up, but it seems like there's been a little bit of a renaissance lately for Sister Rosetta Tharpe. And you mentioned she was, a clip of her was featured in the 2001 movie Amelie. There was a tribute album in 2003, and Keith Richards and Johnny Cash have all mentioned her as a big influence. Is she finally getting her due?
I think so. I think, you know, the fact that people are interested in her, I think, is very, very encouraging. I hope that we will be able to get together some funding to get her a proper gravestone. She is buried in Philadelphia in Northwood Cemetery, but never had a gravestone. And so I hope that we can do that. And yeah, I the more that people hear her music, the better.
All right. Well, thank you very much. Gail Wald is professor of English at George Washington University and author of Shout, Sister, Shout, The Untold Story of Rock and Roll Trailblazer Sister Rosetta Tharpe. Thanks so much, Gail, for joining us.
word. That's a reason for living, a reason for dying, a darn good reason why a woman starts crying, a reason for a mole, a reason for a dimple.